looking, bouncing into Owens, knocked away. Perkins picks it up. He's a three at the buzzer. It's no good. Texas Tech has done it. The dream has become reality. For the first time in school history, the Texas Tech Red Raiders are going to the Final Four.
Texas Tech punching their ticket, knocking off Gonzaga in the West region, the 3-1, and also punching their tickets, Virginia, Auburn, and Michigan State. And we'll get some of the exciting action of all those games coming up later on here during the sports ticket, as the Elite Eight games were truly elite, fantastic games. And if you love college basketball, and as long as you didn't care who won, but you really enjoyed good basketball and exciting basketball, this was the Elite Eight for you. Fantastic basketball games. Local sports information, Mr. Dinas.
Yes, great weekend here this weekend for the Beloit Trojans at the 3A state powerlifting meet. They only had three competitors, but they all brought home hardware. A lot of success there. On the men's side in 242-pound weight class, Creighton Johnson won the state title. A total of 1,095 pounds lifted. He took first in the bench, 315, the squat at 450, and the clean at 330. And also in the women's division, Jess Meyer won the 132-pound title with 520 total pounds, highlighted by a first-place finish in the clean at 175. And also Avery Johnson came home with second place overall in the powerweight division. So congratulations to those three Beloit Trojan powerlifters that had a lot of success there at Halstead 3A State Powerlifting Meet. If you want the full results and everything that happened there, that tournament, you can check out ncksports.com, 3A Powerlifting meet results. Also at ncksports.com, you can read about Cloud County Thunderbird All-Star Invitational taking place this Sunday in Concordia. Volleyball match in both girls and boys basketball games. The event starts at 1 o'clock for girls basketball, boys basketball at 3. Volleyball match will be at 5 o'clock. That's at Cloud County on Sunday. A lot of area athletes that are competing. Girls basketball selections from the area: Sydney Barrett of Beloit, Holly Timmons of Smith Center, Kara Eilert of St. John's, and Caitlin Morris of Southern Cloud. Basketball players picked to play in the All-Star Classic. Tate Thompson, Hudson Smith, and Hayden Budke of Beloit, and Derek Gillett of Rock Hills. And then in volleyball, Breezy Schroeder of Beloit, as well as Elle Eilert and Kara Eilert from St. John's. Grayson Hutchinson of Smith Center, Delaney Harold and Tegan Walter of Sylvan Lucas were all picked to play in the volleyball match. If you want the full rosters and everything of note, of info for the Cloud County Thunderbird All-Star Invitational this Sunday, you can check out ncksports.com. It's the home for all your latest in local sports here in North Central Kansas. So check that out and be informed on everything locally here in the area.
Maybe someday Cloud will figure out how to promote their games.
Yes.
9:13 is the time, 37 degrees.
It's like they post a story on their website now, so I'm glad about that.
Yeah,
that
I can, but they don't that, contact they don't the local us, media
tell
entities.
Tell the media who's going to be there.
They should set up.
Apparently,
it's so
they
simple.
Just tell the people who are going to be doing the game.
And then let all those kids do all the work and selling ads and promoting it and not doing any promotion themselves.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. It's not very hard. Anybody at Cloud County listening here
send
that does
that
this
link
game,
that you just posted.
Here's what you do. Whatever you have on your website, you have a link to the story or you have a press release. All you got to do, you need to send it out to every single media entity that's tied to all of the individuals that are going to be participating in this All-Star game. All the volleyball players, basketball, whatever, or send it to the schools directly. Have the schools then know the media entities and send it out to the media entities. But you need to do better than that. I mean, if I didn't see this across social media on a Facebook plug by a parent of a kid that's participating, I would not have known about
and
this.
I've actually
we
been,
deal with this every year. You have an All-Star game that's supposed to be a big deal, but yet you don't make it a big deal.
Yeah. I actually have been checking, like, a couple different places daily because I know they don't.
But we shouldn't have to do that.
Exactly. Because I know there's going to, I knew there was going to be a lot of our area athletes competing in it because there always is.
Yeah.
And so I make sure I'm checking that because they don't.
Yeah.
They don't let us know.
It's just unbelievable. We're not the only media entity they don't let know either.
No, not at all.
It's like, you know, if a tree,
there's
if a,
coaches
if a tree
that
falls
kids
in a forest.
That are playing in the game that didn't even know.
Yeah, coaches didn't even
know. I had the Solana Central coach I'm kind of buddies with, and he sent me a Twitter message, said, hey, you heard anything about Cloud this weekend? I think I might have some players playing.
But he doesn't even know.
He didn't even know for sure.
How sad is that? Yeah, that has to be stepped up. If you really want it to be a true, unbelievable event, you really need, the first part is, I think some people that have these All-Star games just think you just show up and you put it together.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you know, you put it together, make it a special one for everybody, but also you got to get the word, you got to promote it. Mike Hughes got that. Mike Hughes, when they started the Smith Center All-Star games, Mike Hughes got that. And God rest his soul, he's no longer with us. Mike Hughes understood that you need to promote something like that. You need to make it a big deal. And a lot of people, it's not just Cloud. There's other All-Star games, too, that just don't quite, they have no concept of marketing or promoting the product, or they don't want to spend a penny on it. So they just count on the kids to do all the work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate, in my opinion. You need to step it up. That's all I'm saying. That's a challenge to all those that host these All-Star games. Step it up. Send out a press release. Contact all the local media entities. Whatever you got to do, get the word out. Isn't it better for you to fill that place? Don't you want more attendance and people spending money there? I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. But, hey, it is what it is. All right. You know, one thing that is promoted is the NCAA tournament. Imagine if the NCAA tournament just didn't promote anything. How would we know about it or not? All right. Chris Beard is the head coach of Texas Tech, and I was really happy that Texas Tech made it to the Final Four. Gonzaga's been there a few times, and Texas Tech's never been there, and it starts with your seniors, and Chris Beard has a good set of seniors.
I've always loved our seniors, but I've never been more proud than the four guys to my left right now. They're really the story of Tech basketball this year, and I'm just glad we get to coach them again. The Final Four is awesome and all that, but the most cool thing is I get to coach these guys again. We get to, you know, get after it again in practice and travel and spend time together, and it's going to be a special week for us.
Texas Tech knocks off Gonzaga 75-69. That was a very good basketball game. I saw Doug Gottlieb, and I actually don't mind Doug Gottlieb. I don't. I respect a lot of what he has to say. I know some people don't like him. But he put on Twitter about how John Higgins made it all about himself by calling a technical foul. When the guy reaches across the line and it hits the basketball out of the hands of the inbounder, that is a technical foul.
That's the rule.
That's the rule. What do you want? Do you just change the rules because it's the Elite Eight game or because you wanted Gonzaga to win?
There's less time left in the game, and it's an important part of the game, so you don't call that technical?
That was the correct call. You know, if you want to get upset about a call, is when Owens blocked the three and was stepped out of bounds right in front of not just John Higgins. And John Higgins catches his heat from people in the Midwest, because in the Big 12. John Higgins blew that call. John Higgins is one of the best officials out there. You may not like it. You may not agree with all his calls. He's one of the best out there. If he wasn't, he wouldn't be doing these games.
Yeah.
Okay? So we focus on the calls officials miss. And, yeah, he missed that call, too. But there was an official closer to the play that should have had the call, and yet nobody mentions his name. But they mentioned John Higgins. What, John Higgins the only official on the court? John Higgins got it right. That was a technical foul. They applied it right. It was right. You can be mad because that cost the dramatic suspense at the end of the game. But that's like going back to when Chris Webber called a timeout you didn't have. Well, you know, let's not call that a technical because that ruins the ending of the game. That's the same thing Doug Gottlieb's saying here.
It is.
It's like, well, let's just ignore the rules. That is the rule. John Higgins isn't making it about himself. Here's a thought. The guy that crossed the line and knocked the ball out of the hands of the inbounder, he's the one that committed the violation. Why are you blaming the official? He's there to enforce the rules. And I give kudos to John Higgins, who I don't always agree with calls he makes. But to me, that was absolutely the correct call.
There's no gray area at all on that.
No.
It's a technical
foul.
The right call.
If you don't want that call,
if it's not
then,
in the book, then no, it's not a technical foul. But that rule is in the book.
If you don't want
the
call,
like the people
then
that are broadcasting knew exactly what happened.
Absolutely.
Before he even called the technical, they're like, that's a technical.
Yeah.
And then right there is when he called the technical. And it's like, if they all know that, then you should probably know that too, Doug.
Like right off the bat, I was like, that's either a technical or it could be considered a delay of game warning, I thought. Perhaps they could do that and get around it. But they called the T. I'm like, there's the T.
Yeah.
I was like, boom, game over. And that was the right call. Amazing how people can just somehow erase everything about what basketball is, even people that are supposedly experts in it like that.
Maybe it's because the NBA lets them get away with so much stuff at the end of games. People watch that too much in the playoffs, and it's like, oh.
Maybe so. So Tech and Zaga, that was a good game. Virginia-Purdue was out of this world great.
Oh, my goodness.
Virginia-Purdue was out of this world fantastic. And it came down to, well, Purdue was up three. They decided to foul with about 5.9 remaining, which to me was absolutely the right decision. More on that in a moment. But what ended up happening was this.
5.9 left. Takes a dribble. Puts it up. Left it short. Ball tapped out into the backcourt. 2 seconds. Up ahead, Diakite. He got it! He got it! He got it! Diakite at the buzzer! And Virginia hits the shot to tie it at 70 as the horn sounds! Purdue inbounds it. Carson Edwards won't even put up a shot, and that's it! Virginia, the Cavaliers have broken through to the Final Four. They hit a buzzer beater in regulation with Mamadi Diakite to send it to overtime, and then they get the victory over Purdue, 80-75.
I have to say I'm happy for Virginia because after you lose to a 16 a year before, and it crossed my mind when I filled out my bracket, you know, they just might win the whole thing. That'd be appropriate. You lose to a 16. Would you, if you knew that you're going to win a national championship, but you have to lose to a 16 one year to get that championship, would you do it? Take all the jokes and the embarrassment and everything else? I don't know. I think most people would, but it's tough
if
when you lose to a
16. National championship, I don't care what
happens. Yeah, but you have a year. That, you have to go a year of not knowing that, and you have a year of losing to a 16. Now, Virginia,
if you don't know, then it's like, no, I don't know. I'm not real sure. I want to deal with all that.
Virginia's two wins away from a national championship. First time they go to the Final Four since 1984. Tech's never been, so this is their first trip, and the Final Four is in Minneapolis. So let's go back to the Purdue-Virginia game, and let's talk about philosophy. Because Purdue was Carson Edwards was out of this world sensational. And Charles Barkley, Charles Barkley, I like him too, but he's after the game. You just can't let one guy beat you.
Did you see it? First of all, they won the game.
He said almost, I guess. Yeah. But
that's what I was.
But did he see how far out those threes were? Those were 28-foot threes. I mean, he looked like Steph Curry. He really did, except he looked a little bit more under control. Carson Edwards was fantastic, out of this world. They put a big guy on him, they put a little guy on him, put a fast guy on him, a big guy on him. It didn't matter. He was unbelievable. And he did. He carried the team. When the guy's hot like that, just you ride the guy. He had 42 points. They did lose. But here's the thing. Purdue was up 70-67. Purdue had two free throws, up two. Made first, missed the second. Ryan Klein's got to feel horrible because he missed the second. That would have sealed it.
Yeah.
So he misses the second. Virginia brings it down the floor. And it's 70-67. And Virginia had been making a whole bunch of threes in the second half, including Kyle Guy, who was red hot. It was fun to watch Guy knocking down three after three, Carson Edwards three for three. It was a sensational game. It was out of the, I don't know how many times I like, oh, my Lord, OMG. Yeah. My 12-year-old and I are watching this going, are you serious? This is what you want to see in an Elite Eight game. Teams making shots. You don't want controversy or anything like that. You want players making plays. Not, you know, both teams can't buy a bucket and turnovers and all this. No, this was fantastic basketball. And so Virginia has the ball, and there's 5.9, and nothing's happening offensively, which could be the argument there that, okay, maybe Purdue doesn't foul because Virginia didn't seem to be too set on what they wanted to run there. However, how many times do you see it? We've seen it Kansas against Michigan in the Sweet 16. Oh, what was that, 2014 or 15, whenever it was. They didn't foul with less than 5 seconds, and Trey Burke hit a three and sent the game in overtime. KU lost. We saw Memphis, who was supposed to foul Kansas in 2008, did not. Kansas hit a three, tied the game, went to overtime, won the national championship. There's no question Memphis was supposed to foul. John Calipari told his team to foul, and they didn't get it done. They didn't foul. So here's the thing. After Virginia wins the game, and let's set this up in case you missed it. Virginia had the ball, 5.9 on the clock, and Purdue fouled on purpose. Purdue's up three. So you put a guy at the foul line, and the key is he makes the first for Virginia. Make the first. He made the first. So then the second one, you got 5.9 or whatever it was. Do you miss it on purpose, or do you try to make it? Now, Ty Jerome, who was a free throw shooter, said after the game, he was actually trying to make it. So he missed it. It was short. The ball was tapped out by Diakite all the way into the backcourt. It was then picked up by Kyan Clark, and then he throws a pass to Diakite, a no-look on the money to Diakite's hands in front of his face, a perfect pass. Diakite puts up the shot knowing the clock and shoots it with 0.2 seconds left, swishes it. We go to overtime. Social media idiots, and that's what I'm going to call them, then criticize Matt Painter. He should have let it play out. He shouldn't have fouled. Listen, sometimes it might not work out, and you still did the right thing. I will swear on the Bible and anything else you want to put in front of me. As a coach myself in that situation, I would have done the exact same thing. The exact same thing. Now, if Virginia couldn't make a three, they were struggling, I might have played it out. But you got a guy who made five threes in the second half.
You get that ball in Kyle Guy's hands for some reason when he's open. You don't want that to happen.
If you want an example, just look a little bit earlier in the game. Carson Edwards was guarded, hit a 25-footer, banked it in. Pure luck.
Yeah.
And that gave his team a three-point lead. how that could easily happen with Virginia. You can play great defense, and you throw up a prayer, you bank it in, and you go in overtime. And you know what people would say? The same social media idiots out there?
Should have fouled. Yeah.
Why didn't they foul? It's so convenient to sit on your Barca lounger, drink a beer, and have bunions and whatever, funions, and you have bunions on your feet too. And you just sit there and you think you know everything when you don't know anything at all. Okay, so Matt Painter, what he did was he fouled. Think about this for a second. Here's why it was the right decision. What does Virginia have to do if Matt Painter doesn't foul? In order to tie the game, what does Virginia have to do?
They've got to make a three.
That's it, right? One thing.
Yeah.
They need one thing to happen.
Exactly.
One thing. All right. So there's one thing. How many things had to happen after Purdue fouled Ty Jerome? How many things did Virginia have to do right in order to tie the game in that final 5 points?
Well, after they make the first free throw.
That's one.
They have to miss the second.
Well, that's two.
Or it's the way it did happen. You have to
make the first one.
Yeah.
Then you have to miss the second.
You have to get the rebound.
Then you have to get the rebound, which was a tap out.
Yeah, and then you have to make a two or three, whatever you want to, if you want to win or you want to.
See, everybody misses a step here. You did it just like everybody else I've been. I cannot believe people keep overlooking this. There were five things that had to happen. You're missing the most important part of the entire play. The first thing was you got to make the free throw, okay? Because then you're down two, and you can try to get a tap out. Now, technically, you could have missed both of them, missed the second on purpose, but then you got to tap out and get a three. So you had to make the first, miss the second, tap it out, and then you actually, there's six things. You had to go all the way back to the backcourt and corral the ball.
Well, the tap out is part of that, yeah.
Right, but call that, yeah. That's fine, so call that's that, another, so stick with it.
Yeah.
So you make free throw, miss free throw, tap out, and then everybody goes, and you make the shot. How did he make the shot? The pass!
The pass, yeah.
The pass! The pass by Clark. Think about this. Go back and watch the play, folks. Watch the play. If Clark puts that pass at DeQuite's chest, he doesn't have time to get the ball off.
No.
It was a perfect, on the money, DeQuite had his hands up. He hit him from about 60 feet on the money into his hands so he could just shoot it from there. If he throws that ball on a bounce pass, if he throws that ball probably about 6 inches lower to where it's near his chest or his waist or his knees, he does not get off that shot. Everybody keeps missing that Virginia had to make a sensational pass from clear in the backcourt on the money to a guy that had then the presence of mind to let it fly quickly to beat the clock. And that was not an easy shot. It was not a layup. Virginia had to do not one, not two, not three, not four, but five things to tie the game and send it overtime.
Six
compared
if you're
to
counting the tap out.
If you want to count the tap out, six. Five or six things had to go Virginia's way compared to one thing had Matt Painter not fouled. And you're going to tell me Matt Painter made a mistake? Listen, you need to start coaching. If you want to sit on the sideline and criticize a coach after that, you need to shut the bleep up and you need to go coach. Because that was absolutely the right thing to do. Without question. Okay? The problem you had, it was a scramble play. And why Purdue, which you just react. I don't blame the players. But the couple of them went right in the backcourt. One was trying to get the ball, of course. I get that. But then you left DeQuite wide open. That was a breakdown by Purdue. The other thing is, they didn't box out the greatest. But sometimes a tall guy can put his hand out and tap it out.
Yeah.
That's sometimes hard to stop. And the thing that's really funny about it is Jerome was trying to make it.
Yeah.
He was trying to make it to cut the game to 1 point because there's still 5 seconds left. You could still get a quick foul and maybe you have another chance or you get a steal. I don't know who had the possession arrow. So it was a bummer for Purdue. And if you're a Purdue fan, you're bummed. And you might be saying, what if we didn't foul? They would have missed a three. We would have been in the final four. Yeah, but had you not fouled and a guy makes a three – and you go to overtime, you would have been screaming, why didn't we foul?
Yeah.
So it's absolutely the right thing to do. The clock did start a hair late, by the way, if you go back and watch the replays. But I don't worry about that too much myself because that you got to have the human element in this game. You have to have the human element in this game. I mean, as soon as the ball is tapped out, by the time you hit the button on the clock, it probably takes a couple
of
tints.
A clock operator, if you're not...
Yeah.
If you're not going to do anything.
You're going to reset it every single time.
You're just going to go, like, let's look at the monitor and see if he started at the right time.
Right.
That didn't happen.
So, listen, it goes down to Purdue had to miss a second free throw, and Virginia had to do five or six things right in the span of 6 seconds. So seven things had to go Virginia's way to tie that game. Then, by the way, if you want to criticize and rip Matt Painter, the head coach of Purdue, You do realize that there was 5 minutes in overtime that they played too, right?
Yes.
Which people forget that with Memphis, Kansas. Well, Memphis choked it. Mario Chalmers' shot did not win the game. It felt like it, but it didn't. You had to play overtime. But, of course, you kind of knew what was going to happen in that situation. So I was kind of hoping Purdue would find a way to win because I felt bad that that's how it went down, especially for Matt Painter, because I felt like he did it the right way, and it blew up in his face. It's just bad luck. Sometimes those things happen. Bad luck. But I am happy for Virginia, and Tony Bennett is absolutely a class act. His team bounced in the first round last year against a 16, the first one to ever lose to a 16. And Tony Bennett, after Virginia makes the Final Four for the first time in 35 years, went to the podium and talked about adversity.
Quote is this, if you learn to use it right, the adversity, it will buy you a ticket to a place you couldn't have gone any other way. And I didn't know if that meant we'd get to a Final Four or do that. I just knew it would deepen us in ways on the court, off the court, and what we believe, and mark us for the right stuff. And that, I think, is what took place. And I'm thankful that they said that. You kind of let them, and they had to say that. I'm up here. But there's so many great coaches. Coaches get too much credit when it goes well, and they probably get too much blame when it doesn't go well, you know? And so that's the reality. Growing up a coach's son, I get all that. So this is not about me at all. It's about the program. It's about these young men, the guys who went before us, and, you know, just trying to represent the right stuff. And now we get another chance to play another game.
Hit the nail on the head, didn't he? Right when we're talking about Matt Painter, there's Tony Bennett saying coaches get too much of the credit when they win and too much of the blame when they lose. Matt Painter got too much blame from some knuckleheads out there because of his decision, which was absolutely the right decision. Had it worked out, one of those seven things don't happen. He's in the Final Four celebrating Purdue's first trip since the early 80s to Minneapolis. Sometimes you just luck isn't on your side. I mean, let's think about it. Purdue, how many times do you see this in sports? We saw it with the Beloit basketball team this year. You know, you win a game you shouldn't have won. They shouldn't have beat St. Mary's. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
You're down 9 with 4 minutes to go. You're not supposed to win that game. They win that, and St. Mary's is a good team. And then they're up 7 early in the fourth quarter at state and championship game, and then somebody comes back and beats them. You know, you look at what happened to Duke, and I kind of felt like this might happen to Duke.
Yeah.
You've had two unbelievable close
fired
calls.
Too much here.
Yeah. You had Central Florida that missed the tip-in that rolled around the rim, and how it didn't go in, I don't know. Duke would have been out in the second round. Then the very next round, Virginia Tech on an alley-oop has a perfect play to tie the game and send it overtime with 1 second to go, and the guy just kind of botched it. And so Duke survives another scare. And then what do you know? Yesterday, what happens? They have the final shot, and they can't get it done. Or they get to the foul line, and they can't make it. More on that in a moment. So it's such a fine line. I mean, Auburn could have easily lost the first round. I mean, New Mexico State was fouled on the three, and the guy only made one out of three. Hits two out of three, they go to overtime. He makes all three, Auburn loses. Then they got the ball back after they missed two out of three free throws, had a wide open three from the corner, and airballed it. Had that gone in, Auburn doesn't even make it out of the first round, and they're in the Final Four. It's just amazing, so amazing and incredible how close the margin is between victory and defeat. I mean, look at Purdue. They were lucky. They were fortunate to beat Tennessee in overtime.
Yeah.
And Tennessee was just in tears after they came back from 18 down, and Purdue just made shot after shot. Purdue gets fouled on a three-point try, makes two free throws with 2 seconds to go. That call isn't made by the official. Tennessee is in the Elite Eight against Virginia. And so then Purdue is on top of the world. Ecstasy, right? You're excited. You won. The adrenaline's flowing. You knock Tennessee out, and they're just crying tears of disappointment. And then 2 days later, you're in the exact same situation.
Yeah.
You lose in overtime in the Elite Eight when you thought you had the game won, and in the final 5 seconds it slipped away to force overtime, and now you're the ones crying. And now Virginia's all excited, could very well lose a heartbreaker to Auburn the very next game. It's just it's a cruel world, and not in a cruel world as in, you know, there's worse things in life than losing a basketball game, but in regards to the context of succeeding and failing in the NCAA tournament. It's such a crapshoot. You've heard that before. It is. It's a crapshoot. You can catch a break. You don't catch a break. I mean, we can talk about Kansas in 08. I mean, how many breaks did they catch that year to win the national championship? You need some breaks. Duke looked like they were going to catch all the breaks and make it all the way again this year, and it didn't happen. So Virginia and Tech, first two into the Final Four. Then yesterday, Auburn and Kentucky, and I was really pulling for Auburn. I think a lot of people across the country, they were. And Auburn advances to the Final Four with a gutty win without one of their star players.
Kentucky needs a miracle. Here comes Hagan. Throws through Washington, a three-pointer. Shot no good. Rebound down to Harper. and he puts it away. He's dribbling the clock away. For the first time ever, Auburn is going to the Final Four. In overtime, Auburn knocks off Kentucky 77-71.
I have to admit, dead wrong. I thought Auburn was red hot, caught some breaks in the SEC, and they couldn't keep it going. They rely on the three-point shot so much, and like I said, they should have easily lost. They could have easily lost the first round. I had them losing first round, and I almost looked brilliant, but not. That's the difference between a good bracket and not a good bracket, Dusty. By golly. So, but how about this for Bruce Pearl and Auburn? You beat Kansas in the second round. You beat Carolina in the regional semis in Kansas City. You beat Kentucky, who you lost to twice. Those are three blue bloods. That is pretty impressive. Here's Bruce Pearl talking about that.
You know, I just humbled and blessed. It's an honor to even be on the floor with those programs. And then when you play, your kids play hard and play unselfishly and play together, you know, obviously they're the Cinderellas of this tournament. And that's what makes March so special. Which team is it going to be?
So true. And Auburn, first time they've ever made a Final Four. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome. I think it's great that you have just new blood in the Final Four. It's pretty exciting. They beat Kentucky in overtime, 77-71. Okiki, who was fantastic against Carolina and tore his ACL late in that game. They played shorthanded a little bit, although Auburn is a deep team. And, you know, what's interesting, and I've said this over and over and over, is I truly believe this. If you're going to win championships at any level, whether it be high school, college, or pro, you need your big-time players to make big-time plays and big-time moments. Your stars have to shine, in other words.
Yes.
And you look at it. Look at Texas Tech. Jarrett Culver, I mean, played well. Texas Tech's a complete team. And Culver, he didn't have one of those bad nights. Okay? Virginia, Kyle Guy, who could not make a three to save his life most of the tournament, gets red hot in the second half. He's one of their best shooters. He came up big. And Carson Edwards scored 42 and gave Purdue a chance to win.
40 twice in the tournament.
I know.
That's insane.
A record for four games in a tournament, 139 points. Wish I would have drafted him in our NCAA player draft. Darn it. And then you look at Auburn yesterday. Bryce Brown took over in the second half. I mean, he took over. He listened to Charles Barkley's advice, which was good advice at halftime. He said, they're going to defend the three-point line. You got to drive it. Then they'll open up the three-point line. And that's what Brown did. I didn't know he had that in his game. He proved it. Jared Harper then was clutch down the stretch. That's their two best players. They played fantastic.
And Harper's got that thing you can't teach, that quickness to the basket. It's insane.
He's fun to watch.
He said, okay, you guys are tall, but I'm faster than you are.
Yeah. I hadn't really had a chance to watch him much this year until the SEC tournament. And I was like, whoa, this kid. They're talking about Devon Dotson, KU being fast. I think Harper might be faster.
Yeah.
He is amazing and fun to watch. So the point is, Auburn's two best players came to play.
Yes.
P.J. Washington, Kentucky, phenomenal. After him sitting out the first two games, he had 28 points yesterday and I think 14 rebounds. But you needed somebody else. Tyler Hero, who is one of their leading scorers, had a bad game. And no coincidence, Kentucky loses. So now we move on to the final game. And I told my son, this is coming down to the final seconds. Before the game started, I said, it'll come down to the final seconds. It's Michigan State and it's Duke. And Duke was up 9, 30-21. And I thought, oh boy. And next thing you know, Michigan State goes a 13-0 run. They led 34-30 at halftime, and it was game on from there. Tons of lead changes and ties in the second half. Duke was up 66-63 after a 7-0 run. And you're thinking, oh, man, Duke's going to do it again. They're going to find a way. And Michigan State down 66-65, called a timeout. Tom Izzo drew up the perfect play.
Tillman has to back it out. Goins, open three, left wing, got it! The three falls for Kenny Goins! Michigan State 68, Duke 66 with 30 seconds to go. Mouth in an O as he looks, tries to trigger, gets it to Winston. Winston runs to the other end. Winston dribbling around with 1 second, and that's it. Winston avoids the foul, and Winston sends Michigan State soaring to the Final Four. The Spartans have done it. They knock off the number one seed Duke 68-67. Michigan State is going to its 10th Final Four.
Michigan State, man, I thought they had a shot in this one. I really did, especially after Duke's had a couple close calls. And one of the things we talked about when we were talking about the bracket, and we're breaking it down here on the show, and we get things wrong sometimes, but one of the things we talked about was And even though I still had Duke in the championship game, I didn't have Duke winning at all because I felt like at some point their youth's going to catch them.
Mm.
And one of the reasons why I thought Michigan State had a really good chance yesterday was, one, I knew Cam Reddish was 100%. And he's their best three-point shooter. But two, Michigan State has experience. And then I'm like, well, they've lost 7 in a row to Duke. I'm like, man, they're due. They're due. And it'd be kind of ironic that everybody whined about Michigan State being in with Duke when they should have been in with Gonzaga, and Michigan should have been with Duke. Michigan State just, you know, and then it shouldn't have been a controversy. You know, people, you know, very thin-skinned, criticizing Tom Izzo for going after one of his players during a timeout, which was ridiculous, and that's how we've become in society. Instead of dealing with adversity and overcoming it, we want everything to be soft
shocking
and easy.
That they could win and make it to the Final Four with a coach like that.
That's amazing. I mean, a total jerk like that, that's just so mean to his players. How could they possibly beat Duke? It's just ridiculous. There's so many people out there that should just stay off of social media and just stop with everything. But whatever. Some of them don't have a life, so that's all they got. Anyway, Tom Izzo talks about mental toughness. And when you think about him as a coach, he helps create that.
Big win for us. I can't tell you how many times in those huddles they didn't quit, they didn't give in, and I said we might not be physically as tough as some teams I've had, but I think mentally we might be tougher than any team I had.
Okay, so let's look at the best players in that game. Michigan State, Cassius Winston, absolutely fantastic, especially when they were down 9. He really stepped it up. He was reported from the sideline by Tracy Wolfson, who did a nice job. Said Tom Izzo during timeout when they're down 9, told Cassius Winston, you gotta make plays here. You need to step up. Xavier Tillman, you gotta step up. He had 19. And you look at Duke, in RJ Barrett had a decent game, but it wasn't like he had a moment where he took over. And he's supposed to be the number 2 overall pick in the draft. And then Zion took over for a stretch there in the second half. And then later in the game, Duke couldn't understand how to throw a lob pass into Zion. Just throw it high and let him go catch it. They keep throwing it too short, and they made turnovers. But here's the thing that blows me away. And I do think Tom Izzo outcoached Mike Krzyzewski yesterday. I do. Mainly because of this one thing. You've got the greatest player that maybe has ever lived in college basketball, according to many, in Zion Williamson. You've got a guy that flat out, they couldn't stop. I mean, you get him in the post, you can't stop him. He's too strong. He's too quick. He's too agile. And you've got 8 seconds left, and you're down 2. And this happened against Gonzaga as well earlier this year in Maui, where Duke gave the ball to R.J. Barrett, and Barrett was the one, and Zion Williamson never touched the ball in the final possession. Last I checked, Zion's the greatest player that's ever lived. He's better player than R.J. Barrett. I think they're both great players, by the way. But Zion Williamson listen, I don't like all the I think it's overhype to an extent. I know he's, maybe it's not overhype, it's overkill. Every single play he makes, Jim Nance and Grant Hill and Bill Raftery just drooling over themselves. I'm like, yeah, some of those plays were unbelievable. Some of them were like, yeah, okay, we're trying to build this guy into a god. He's not, he's human. He's a 53% foul shooter his last 10 games, okay? There is something he can't do. But I'm sitting here, supposedly Mike Krzyzewski's the greatest coach that ever coached college basketball, him or John Wooden, right?
Yeah.
He's considered the best in his profession. He's been to 12 Final Fours, multiple national championships. You had a game early in the year against Gonzaga where you let R.J. Barrett have it at the end of the game. Zion never touched it, and you lost the game as a result. Why didn't you just throw the ball to Zion, clear it out, and let him put his head down and drive it? And put the onus on the official to call a foul. Call the foul. What happened in Central Florida? He drove it, ran over a guy, probably a charge. Didn't call it, did they? Because he's a star player. So that's another reason why you let Zion drive it. And he got the and one because he usually finishes close to the bucket. Now, maybe one of the thoughts that Mike Krzyzewski had was, well, Zion drives and gets fouled, they're not going to let him shoot it. And then Zion's not a great foul shooter. Maybe he was thinking that. But I'm sorry. He is your best player. Is there any doubt about that? Zion Williamson, when you took him out of the lineup, Duke had problems winning. How do you not draw up a play if you're Mike Krzyzewski? And once again, this is criticism, and it is hindsight 2020 to an extent, but I'm watching the game. I think most people said, watching the game, Zion's got to have the ball. And he also can shoot the 3. Let Zion make the decision. I would have got it to him They had 8 seconds. They were throwing in from the corner. Okay, I would somehow come up with a play, get Zion the ball, or at least get him a touch. Now, I don't know if that would have been in the post. I don't know if they could have got it to him at the top of the three-point line and had enough time for him to go one-on-one. I don't know. But somehow, some way, he has to touch the ball. But in fairness to Coach Krzyzewski, Michigan State probably knew that too, and I'd have to go back and look at the play. Maybe Michigan State just flat out put a blanket on Zion Williamson. But here's the thing. Everybody talks about Zion Williamson. What's one of the things they talk about? He's a freak athlete.
Yeah.
He can jump above everybody. Why wouldn't you just, I mean, I don't think, nobody could stop Zion from catching a lob.
Yeah.
Seriously, the problem with the entry passes Zion those last two or three turnovers they had is because they threw the ball way too low. Throw the ball high. You could grab it, throw it underhand up about 20 feet and let Zion go get it. And he would get it. I just don't understand. Sometimes you just, even the best coaches in all of the world, and trust me, I'm not as good of a coach as Coach K. I'm not. But I'm just saying, everybody watching that game was like, you got to give it to your best player. That best player is Zion Williamson. He's the best player in all of college basketball. Nobody's going to refute that at all. And your season's on the line, and you might sit and go, well, how do we possibly get it to him? They know it's coming to Zion. Lob it to him.
Yeah.
And then guess what's going to happen? He's probably going to have two or three guys around him. Now he can kick it. Somebody's going to have a wide open shot, or he's going to go ahead and try to bulldoze his way in and make the official blow the whistle. Either way, it's probably going to turn out better for Duke than what they did. Now, R.J. Barrett did get fouled. He drove it. He did get fouled. And here's what's so odd about sports. We just talked about Virginia, how they were down by three. He made the first, was trying to make the second, missed it short, tapped out. Everybody thought he missed it on purpose, the second free throw, which I thought he did.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't. He was trying to make it. He missed it. And as a result of him missing it instead of making it, Virginia probably won that game. Think about this. R.J. Barrett goes to the line yesterday for two free throws with 5 seconds to go against Michigan State, down two. And his first free throw, he clanks off the back iron. He was trying to make it. He missed it. The second free throw, he's trying to miss, and he threw it hard.
Very obvious.
He did, and he did it right. He did it the right way. Yeah. So many guys don't know how to miss a free throw. He did it the right way, and it somehow went in.
It hits that soft part of the back and plops down in.
Yeah, but the first free throw hit the back and went.
The first one, you could tell it was too hard right when it left, and it.
But the second one was flatter than the first one, yeah. And that one went in. And he did the right thing. He's trying to miss the second. And now if he makes the first, you make the second, and you probably go to overtime. But he missed the first. When he missed the first, I'm like, this is all about trying to rebound the ball now. And then the ball went in. So think about that for a second. When you're trying to think about how do you get lucky or catching breaks in order to make the Final Four or not, think about that for a second. A guy was trying to make his first free throw and missed it. Who's going to be the number two overall draft pick in the NBA draft? That's how good this kid is. He's not a bad foul shooter.
Yeah.
He was trying to make the first. He missed it. He's trying to miss the second and made it. That's called March Madness. That's March Madness.
Yeah. That's all March Madness. Everything we've been talking about.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I could tell right when he shot the first one that he was going to miss. Now it's a different scenario because there's not quite as much time as there was with the Virginia game.
Right.
And so you're probably like, I got to miss this second one and then. And then it goes in.
I had a
weird feeling, though, when he was getting ready to shoot the second one. I'm like, I don't think we're going to get this two games in a row where there's a miss and then a shot touch puts it into overtime. We're like, he's probably going to make this.
Yeah, well, second accident. Last three games because the B-Tech was the game in between.
Yeah,
but yeah. Right.
But, yeah, you know what I'm
Yeah,
what
last
I'm saying,
second
yeah.
pick.
And it was like, he's probably going to roll this one in on accident. And it did.
I have to admit, I was glad Duke lost. I'm not a Duke fan. I do respect some of their players. I respect Coach K, although I still think Duke is not a clean program. You can't tell me, how did Zion get to Duke? I mean, that's got to be investigated. I mean, come on. How did he get to Duke? He went to a private school, and he was asking for handouts, him and family and guardians and members and all this stuff from other schools, which has been well documented. But he chose Duke because they didn't offer him anything? I find that hard to believe. I really do. But anyway, he's going to be the number one overall pick in the draft. I know some people want him to go to the Knicks, and I think that's how the NBL set it up. I think they can rig it. And the Knicks are the worst team in basketball anyway, so they'll have a really good chance of getting Zion. I don't think Zion's going to the Cavaliers. I'd highly doubt. The NBL makes sure of that. So he'll probably be a Knickerbocker next year, I would imagine. And he is an amazing talent. So he has a lot to think about. There are some people saying he shouldn't even play the rest of the year after he blew out his shoe, which was ridiculous. But here's Zion, who was the best player in college basketball this year. His numbers are crazy. He's a freak of an athlete. He should have a monster NBA career. But at the end of the game, he never touched the ball.
You know, a lot's obviously going through our mind right now. And we're very upset, obviously, because, you know, we wanted to go to the Final Four. But congrats to Michigan State. You know, they deserve it. They played a hell of a game. And, you know, just look around the locker room and see, like, your teammates and your brothers. And you just think, you know, this group probably never will play together again.
Oh, it won't. Unless you want to come back, Zion, you and RJ, but I don't think that's happening. Cam Reddish probably go pro, too. Yeah. That's two straight years that Duke has had more talent, but they're young. You know, they lost to Kansas in the Elite Eight. They had experience with Grayson Allen, but Marvin Bagley, stud freshman, Wendell Carter, stud freshman, and they had a kid that could shoot threes that was a freshman. I forgot his name. They all went to the NBA, and Duke, of course, just goes and gets three, you know, the top three kids in the class this year, and they lose in the Elite Eight again, and they lost to a experienced team in the Elite Eight again. So there, you know, we get all caught up in the talent level, and people think automatically that Duke's just going to roll to the championship. But a lot of times, in order to win a championship, really the exception to me would be Kentucky with Anthony Davis in 2012, although they had a little bit of experience on that team. But you just usually you're not going to win championships or even make the Final Four with all freshmen. You've got to have some veteran leadership, some veterans mixed in there. And Duke really didn't have that this year.
No. Look at the four teams that are in the Final Four.
Experienced.
They're experienced, and you know, they've got, and I know Culver's a sophomore, but they got that experience at Texas Tech who can really play.
And got some guards that experience.
Exactly. And so, I mean, all you got to do is look at the four teams that made it and understand that experience matters still in this tournament. It's not just going to be, let's get five guys that are all world and we're going to win a championship.
Absolutely.
It doesn't happen.
No, it really doesn't.
I mean, it happens, but not often.
Not very often at all. So Tech, first time ever. Auburn, first time ever. Virginia, first time since 84. And Michigan State in their 10th Final Four. Michigan State will take on Texas Tech. That'll be the late game on Saturday night from Minneapolis. And Virginia-Auburn will be the first game. Man, I tell you, Virginia-Auburn, I think, is going to be fun. It's going to be really interesting, the contrasting styles.
Exactly. That's what's going to be interesting about that one.
I think Michigan State-Texas Tech's going to end up being a physical battle. That'll be lower scoring. So after the ACC and the SEC dominating this tournament, at the end of the day, we have one Big 12 team, one Big 10 team, one ACC team, and one SEC team. That's kind of cool. I like that. I'm good with it. By the way, this was thrown out on Twitter, and I've thought about this before, but I've just been too lazy to do the research. Somebody asked, since the field expanded to 64 teams in 1985, hasn't KU played a lot of eventual national champions or national runner-ups, no matter whether they lost in first round, second round, third round, whatever it was? 16 of the last 34 years, KU has been in the NCAA tournament. KU has two national championships, of course, during that time, 88 and 05, or 08, excuse me. And 10 losses of the 16 have been to the eventual champion and four losses to runner-up. So 16 of their 34 NCAA tournament appearances since 1985, they've either won the national championship, lost to eventual champion, or the national runner-up. And Kansas this year lost to Auburn, who made the Final Four.
Yeah.
So when Kansas loses to somebody, usually those teams go a long way. Yeah. Now, Northern Iowa, I remember, BKU lost next round to Michigan State.
Think about when they lose to them, too.
Right, exactly.
That's why that number's up there, because a lot of times they're either into the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight.
Which proves the point of how good Kansas has been in the tournament. People keep thinking they're not great in the tournament because they lost back-to-back first-round games way back 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And people think, well, they only have one national championship to show for it since Bill Self's been there during this run of Big 12 championships. They've only been to three Final Fours, and they think that's disappointing. But what they don't factor in is how many Elite Eights, how many Sweet 16s.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Yeah,
they haven't lost a first-round game since 06.
If you look at those games they lose early in the tournament, those teams aren't making it to the
Bradley Bucknell,
Bradley Bucknell, Northern Iowa, Stanford, Wichita State, you know, all those teams that they lose to early aren't playing for the national championship.
No. Which means you go deep in.
Michigan did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure they made it to the national championship that year.
They did. They lost to Louisville.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was the year Wichita State made it, too, to the Final Four, if I remember right.
Right.
But, yeah, it's it's all relative of where that mm-hmm. team goes. So right. you're going to have a lot of losses to national champions and national runner-ups when you play in the Elite Eight.
Right.
All they have to do is win one more game to be considered that part of what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. What's amazing is 10 times.
National champions, yeah.
That's really, yeah. that's crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Interesting nugget there. And you're right. That just shows how good Kansas has been in the tournament, and people think they've been disappointing in the tournament, is that when they lose to somebody, it's a team that goes on to win it all or finish national runner-up. Of course, last year they lost to the national champion,
yeah.
Villanova. Now, the year before, they lost to Oregon. Oregon lost in the Final Four, so yeah. that wouldn't. But they did make the Final Four. Of course, that was a Elite Eight game. Obviously, you lose the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
You lose to a teammate at Final Four. This year, you lose second round, which normally would mean they probably don't go very far. And that yeah. team made a Final Four. So that would be an exception to what
There's
you're saying.
There's a chance for another. Yeah, that would be.
That's crazy, man. Crazy stuff. All right, Major League Baseball is underway. And, well, before we get to the Royals, you need to know about Christian Yelich. Have you been following what this guy's been doing? I mean, the last 2 months last year, he was hitting the cover off the ball. Late push, was MVP of the National League, a guy the Marlins just got rid of because of cash and this and that, traded to the Brewers, and Brewers make a playoffs last year, win the division. Lorenzo Cain's on the team. Of course, former Royal in center field. Mike Moustakas now plays second for the Brewers. Christian Yelich, this is pretty exciting. And you got Mr. Bob Uecker. You're going to hear some Bob Uecker. That's why I can't wait to play this. Christian Yelich yesterday, he became only the fifth Major League Baseball player in Major League Baseball history to start the season with home runs in four consecutive games. This coming off an MVP season last year. And not only does he hit home runs, they're clutch home runs. Here's what he did yesterday. He hit his fourth home run in as many games, and he also delivered the game winner as the Brewers beat the Cardinals. Enjoy.
It's Christian Yelich. What a start he has had. Here comes Christian Yelich. What a start he has had to the season. First Brewer ever to homer in each of the first three games of the season. And the only reigning MVP to start the following season that way.
One delivery, and Yelich sends one to left center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Yelich! Oh, my goodness! How about that guy?
He has homered in four consecutive games.
And a shot in the left center field! The game is tied!
Have come from behind to beat the St. Louis Cardinals with a two-run ninth inning, and Christian Yelich does it again.
Man, that's exciting stuff right there. The Brewers were talking about, that was a series with the Cardinals, and those two could very well battle for the division title at the end of the year. It was a four-game series in Milwaukee, and the Brewers won three of the four, and two were come-from-behind fashion. And then, of course, Kane robbed a homer yeah. to end the game the opening day. They said it felt like October, and it's March.
Yeah.
I mean, you could hear the energy in the stadium. That is so awesome. That gives me goosebumps. And Uecker's great. Now, those were great calls. So the Brewers are 3-1 to start the year. Do you know who leads the American League Central, ladies and gentlemen? It's your Kansas City Royals.
Kansas City Royals are part of that equation.
Along with the Minnesota Twins. A battle for first place tomorrow night.
Yes.
As the Royals will host the Twins. The Royals get today off. The Royals win their first two games of the year. Then lost to the White Sox yesterday 6-3 as Gelato, the starting pitcher, Lucas Gelato, which is a highly prized prospect with the Nationals for a while, and then eventually a few years ago was traded to the White Sox. And he had a no-hitter through six innings. The Royals finally broke through, made a rally but came up short. And they lost 6-3. Royals are 2-1 on the season. Here's Yost talking about the pitching performance of the young hurler for the White Sox.
You know, he's pitched good against us in the past. You know, he walked Witt on four pitches, and you know that he's got good stuff. You're hoping, okay, maybe he's off today. Maybe he's going to struggle to throw strikes. But that wasn't the case. He was really, really good with three pitches.
Really, the story yesterday was Kyle Zimmer. Even though the Royals lost the game, Kyle Zimmer made his Major League debut. Of course, he was the fifth overall pick in 2012. He's been ravaged by injuries, shoulder, arm, elbow injuries. He sat out a year of baseball basically to rebuild his arm. And then he was throwing 95, 96 in spring training. He made his debut yesterday, pitched an inning, struck out the first guy he ever faced with a nasty curveball. And he struck out to allow just one hit on 20 pitches. He's a guy, if he can stay healthy, and that's been the huge if for his whole career, he could be a dominant pitcher in that bullpen for the Royals. And who knows, he might end up being their closer.
Yeah.
And Ian Kennedy's looked pretty good in the bullpen, which I thought he would be. I thought he'd be a good adjustment there to the bullpen because he's got three pretty solid pitches. And the Royals start the year 2-1. Jake Junis will be on the hill for KC. Excuse me, Brad Keller will be on the hill for KC. Royals have only used three starting pitchers, but they've had a couple off days. So Brad Keller will get to start against Minnesota tomorrow night, starting a three-game set. Or is it three games?
Just two.
It's just two because they got to be in Detroit on April the 4th.
Yeah.
So it's a two-game set with the Twins. And if you're worried about the standings already, well, Tampa Bay 3-1, Royals 2-1 to lead their division. Seattle's 5-1. And by the way, there's only one undefeated team left in Major League Baseball. That's Philadelphia Phillies. They're 3-0 with Bryce Harper. There's only one winless team left in baseball. That's the Atlanta Braves. They're 0-3, swept by the Nationals. Milwaukee's 3-1. Dodgers and the Padres with Eric Hosmer, Manny Machado, they are off to a 3-1 start. The Rockies are 2-2, and the Royals were the last team to lose in the American League, for what that's worth.
Yeah.
They did lose yesterday. They don't have the best record in American
League.
They
won't be the last team to lose in the American League as the season goes on.
No. Seattle's got the best record. They're now 5-1. They played six games already. That's, of course, they played two in Japan. All right, Nebraska gets their man for men's basketball. Fred Hoiberg, 7-year, $25 million deal. He'll be introduced at a news conference tomorrow, and this is not April Fool's joke. Fred Hoiberg is going to be the head coach.
It's actually happening.
It's a big deal. There's some people saying, well, why, that's the best of that Fred Hoiberg could do. actually, probably so right now.
At this point, yeah.
At this point, it probably is.
I can't think of anything better.
UCLA is open, but I just didn't. He's 46 years of age, Hoiberg, still young. He went to the NBA, tried it, didn't work with the Bulls, but got a lot of money to do it. He was born in Lincoln, Nebraska, Fred Hoiberg. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And his grandfather was a head basketball coach from 55 to 63 at Nebraska. I did not know that either. So he said all along that he thought it'd be a good fit.
Yeah.
And I think once Nebraska heard that, like, we got to go get that guy. I'm going to make a bold prediction right now. I said when Scott Frost was hired in Nebraska that he's going to win a Big Ten title at Nebraska. And I think he's got a chance. If you win a Big Ten title, you're going to be in a college football playoff more than likely. So that means you're going to be in a national championship hunt. And I think Frost will get Nebraska there at some point during his career as a head coach because he'll be there for a very long time.
It's not going to be a consistent thing, like every year thing, but no. I agree with you. I think that he will get him to that point.
He'll get him to that point once or twice.
Yeah.
I'll say at least once. I mean, he's going to, and the other thing, he's going to be there for 20 years.
Yeah.
So the odds are in my favor on that prediction.
Yeah.
Fred Hoiberg, Nebraska men's basketball has never won an NCAA tournament game. Mark my words. You can record this, which we are, and we can mark it. Fred Hoiberg will lead Nebraska to the NCAA tournament at some point during these 7 years, which I don't know if he'll fulfill the seven-year contract, because I think he's going to do a great job. And after 3 or 4 years, or maybe sooner, he's going to go to greener pastures. Although, he did that, went to the Bulls. He's got a lot of money in the bank. I don't think he'll ever go back to the NBA. So maybe if there's, if KU popped open, Bill Self left. Fred Hoiberg was mentioned as a candidate a few years ago when people were talking about Bill Self maybe leaving.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be opposed to that. I mean, it might make sense. He was really good at Iowa State. He relies on transfers a lot. He's a good recruiter. He usually puts together a good staff. He's still young. He's vibrant. Played in the NBA, so I think young guys are like, respect that. 7-year, $25 million contract. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I don't think it's a very big limb, really. Fred Hoiberg will win Nebraska's first NCAA tournament game as head coach of the Cornhuskers. Agree or disagree?
Agree.
Agree? All right.
He doesn't bolt after like 2 years or something.
Yes, true. True. And even then, I think he'll find a way to. If he bolts after a couple of years, that means they probably had to have won a game or two in the tournament.
I'm going to go out on a limb right now. I'm taking myself out on a limb right now. They make the tournament next year.
I agree.
Because if he gets healthy and guys stay, or he brings in guys that he probably can.
I mean, Nebraska wasn't that far off this year.
They had injuries, yeah. I mean, they started well.
Yeah, they did.
And
Last year they barely missed it.
Nebraska's in the tournament next year. That's my prediction.
I agree with
you. I don't know if I'm not going to right away say they're going to get that first win next year. But
yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to saying that, but I won't go quite that far because it depends
on how it plays out
everybody that he brings in. But you're in a Big Ten conference, so if you're a bubble team, you got a good chance of making it. And Hoiberg's a bit of a marquee name to an extent. I think that would help you if you're on the edge of getting in. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a great fit for Nebraska. It's just the question is, how long is he going to stay there? You know Scott Frost can probably stay in Nebraska for the rest
of his
career.
He's a lifer if it goes well for him.
You would think, Scott Frost.
You would think, yeah.
Now, Fred Hoiberg, unless the NFL comes calling, maybe Frost would jump. I don't know.
Yeah.
If you've accomplished everything, if you win a national championship in Nebraska as a head coach,
well, yeah, I mean,
maybe Frost would go to the NFL at some point, although I still think he's a lifer too. Whereas Hoiberg, I don't think, is a lifer in Nebraska. All right, and finally, Kansas football star Puka Williams has agreed to diversion in his domestic violence case, meaning he must fulfill certain requirements in order for his misdemeanor domestic battery charge to be dropped and to avoid court. So, according to court documents, the Jayhawk running back and Douglas County District Attorney Charles Branson signed a diversion agreement on Thursday. This is in regards to an incident from December 5th of 2018, when, according to an affidavit obtained by the Kansas City Star, a woman told a KU police officer on December 6th that Williams punched her in the stomach and grabbed her by the throat. The terms of the year-long diversion agreement for Williams include undergoing a domestic violence offender assessment by April 30th. He agrees to follow all recommendations from that program. If there are none, he will then need to complete an anger management course by November the 30th. He also has to perform 40 hours of community service by November 30th. And a 12-month agreement also bars Williams from consuming alcohol or recreational drugs. He must submit to any drug test at the request of any law enforcement office, counselor, or district attorney, which is interesting. A kid of that age, you can't have any alcohol, do any of that stuff for a year, and you're going to take drug test? It seems kind of... Now, I don't want to poo-poo what he did, okay, or allegedly did, but does he have an alcohol problem? Because I don't know how you can force a guy... How can you do that? How can you say...
Some of that stuff's pretty standard for a diversion agreement, though. I think that's the key.
No, you can't drink any alcohol?
You can't
have a beer with your buddies?
I know somebody that had a diversion agreement that couldn't drink alcohol.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That seems... Wow. I could think of a lot of other things they could make him do besides that.
Yeah. But I think that's just kind of standard as...
I guess so.
Being on your best behavior and, you know, not putting yourself into those...
A whole year.
I don't know if he was... This one wasn't, the person I knew wasn't a year. It was, I think it was 6 months, but that's just based on whatever your agreement is. But
Well, Puka Williams is still officially suspended by Kansas football, and they're going to continue to take the matter very seriously, continue to look into it and follow that situation. But as of now, Puka Williams will not have to go to court agreeing to a diversion program. However, he has not been reinstated to football team as of yet.
How old is Puka Williams, by the way?
He's young.
Last year, is he even old enough to drink beer? To drink alcohol?
Well, that's
another thing.
We know that doesn't matter.
Well, I get that, but it's like interesting to me.
Yeah,
is he 21?
Yeah, because he shouldn't be drinking
any. He is.
I'm gonna try to see how old he is.
I mean, he was a true freshman last year.
So
he couldn't have been. I mean, say you get held back, you're 19, you're 20 when you start. I don't think he should be 21 yet.
I don't know. I'm trying to find out where. If it says when he was born.
Well, like I say,
it's not a big deal.
It's all trivial because he's a college kid.
Right, you know? Right. But you would think he's not.
That just like hit me. I'm like, wait, he was a true freshman last year.
You wouldn't think he's old enough to drink. I wouldn't think so. Especially as a true freshman. I would be willing to bet you he isn't. So that's also interesting because technically, illegally, you're drinking alcohol alone.
Yeah. So it's like this is part of your diversion, but. It's also part of life.
Yeah, right. So maybe that's why it's included. Because maybe that's why it's included. You shouldn't be drinking at all anyway.
Maybe he turns 21 in 12 months, and this is like...
Right. This incident you had involved alcohol. You're not supposed to even be drinking alcohol. You're not even of age yet. Which some people, of course, argue across this country. You're 18, old enough to vote and die for your country. Why can't you be allowed to drink alcohol? Yeah, it's a decent point. I don't want to get into that political landscape, but it is something that's thrown out there from time to time.
Yes.
Of course, we know most kids in even high school and college, not saying it's right, but a lot of them at least have a beer here and there in high school, but especially when they go to college, even if they're not of age, when they're freshman, sophomore, sometimes a junior. So let's not be naive and think that doesn't happen. Of course it does. So we'll see if Puka Williams gets reinstated with KU football. If Les Miles and KU wants to turn things around quickly, they need Puka Williams on the football field.
Yes.
And the same thing applies for the Chiefs. The Chiefs really want to have a great shot of making the Super Bowl next year. They probably need Tyreek Hill. Nothing new on that front. We'll keep you updated on it. So your Final Four is set. It's Virginia versus Auburn, Texas Tech versus Michigan State. So we will make our picks later this week. And remember, you go with the opposite of what we pick. It's been very, very clear throughout this tournament. Whatever we pick, you go opposite. How we do our bracket contest here?
Well, I was just going to say, how we pick is not good. My not Final good. Four has all red lines in it.
Me too.
I'm 55th out of 65 overall.
Well, that's awesome.
You're 60th.
That's pretty good.
Liam's last. He's not.
He's five.
Not gonna be able to.
At least I beat a five-year-old.
Exactly.
Not literally. I beat him in a contest.
There's two people that really have, or three people that have a chance to move, and one of them's your wife. She could finish this thing in like second place because she has Virginia winning it.
I know.
She can't finish any higher than second.
She has two of the four Final Four teams.
Yeah.
She has Michigan State, Virginia. She has Virginia winning it all. Yep.
And Jax is, I think, maybe a little older than Liam, and he might win this thing.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that's why we love this contest. Because
yes.
All of us older people, Dusty, me, or other people out there, mom, dad, they think they know all this stuff and are going to pick it. And then these little kids, you let the little kids pick them. Or let your wife, who knows nothing about basketball, or let somebody that doesn't know anything about basketball fill these out. And it just goes to show you, you don't need to know anything to fill out this bracket.
Yes.
You absolutely do not. You don't.
We need Virginia to win, though, because if they don't, Devin's probably going to win this whole thing.
Treister?
So, yeah, so.
Treister?
He's in first right now.
Oh,
so.
God.
We really need Virginia to win at least one game.
We'll never hear the end of that.
Exactly.
Poor Dusty Lowry. He's got to work with that guy.
Yeah,
but how's Dusty Lowry doing?
He's in the middle of the pack somewhere.
He's graduated from being horrible. Yeah. There was a couple years where he was just dead last.
Yeah.
But now he's graduated to the middle tier. He's now average. Congratulations, Dusty.
Yes.
You're now average.
Yes.
And then there's Treister. Seriously? Devin Treister? DT?
Yeah.
Top of the standings right now?
Right now. But
wow.
If Virginia wins one game, he's going down.
Well, I'm cheering for Virginia then.
Yeah.
No, I'm just
all
they
got to do is win one.
Actually, I'm cheering for Auburn, I think. Because I like Auburn. I like how they play. I probably cheer for Auburn. Huh. Treister is leading the thing. Well, it's obvious. His daughter Avery filled it out.
Yes.
It's obvious.